Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about the devil.
Yes, the devil. Not really much of a devil, you know? Yeah,
not a lot of, I mean, still a little, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
We both saw Devil Wears Prada 2 this week, and we're going to talk about that. But Adam got to go see a movie last weekend after we recorded that I was pretty high on, and we've kind of sort of talked about it, but like I want to get into some like nitty gritty. It's called Over Your Dead Body, and it's like realistically by the time I push this episode out on Monday, it may actually be available on streaming.
Which is unfortunate because the theater that I saw it in was pretty packed because it was one of the smaller theaters.
Oh, that's good.
And man, it played like gangbusters.
That's awesome. So, yeah. So Samara Weaving, who this is her second film in like a month in theaters. So good for her. Samara Weaving, Jason Segel, Timothy Oliphant, what's her name?
Juliette Lewis.
Yeah, Juliette Lewis. Like it's not a packed cast, but it is it's a pretty great cast. So we're going to spoil it for it. If you didn't get a chance to see it, which you probably didn't because it didn't make a ton of money. But I don't know that like knowing anything about the movie would spoil like the good time. It just, you know, cause you kind of see all the twists and turns coming, right? Like,
yeah,
I didn't know anything. I saw like maybe some kind of like 5 or 10, 15 second trailer. So going into it, I didn't know that it was about like two people legitimately with a plan to kill each other to collect the life insurance on the other one, like a married couple. I didn't know that that was the plot of the movie. I thought it was a little bit more like the War of the Roses.
Like, yeah, where they hate each other.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they're just, it's an ever escalating, like war of like, you know, attrition, not like actual murder, death, kill.
Yeah. This is an absolutely wild ride of a film that is funny and like gross in the way you need it to be gross. Like it doesn't shy away from the, I hesitate to say body horror because that brings up like Cronenberg, but they do lean into the like
gruesome.
Gruesome.
It's very like, it is like, it's a movie that is, how can I put this? Like it is a horror, like it very much is a companion to like, you know, Ready or Not, because its violence is horror twinged, like, and very darkly comedic. It's both, you're both like grossing, like it's both gross out, but gross out in the gruesome way, like in the morbid, like, you know, like at a certain point, somebody gets their foot shot off and they open
Fargo.
Up their,
like, yeah, Fargo. It's very Coen-esque.
Yes, so. But like on steroids, because the Coens don't even do this kind of stuff that they're doing here. It is very, like I said, it is very horror coded. Like if you're into horror and you like dark comedies, this is the thing for you. If you just be prepared, it goes pretty far with that kind of violence. Like it doesn't just shoot somebody, it like literally blows off their face. But if you're okay with that, which like, you know, there are people that like, you know, like I said, like this is probably like, I didn't say it, but it's one of my favorite movies of the year because of just how unexpectedly funny it is. Like
I completely agree. It's everything I wanted. Like I did enjoy Now You See Me.
Ready or Not.
Ready or not. I did enjoy that, but like this is the movie like I hoped it would be. Like it has that, and that's a sequel, so it's a little hard to be like, you're stuck in that formula, you know, and this has a similar feel to it. I would say it's definitely the movie I wish They Will Kill You was, which I didn't hate, but it was just kind of like, it didn't have any real bite to it. Like once you knew what that movie was, it was like, I see everything coming. And this, even when you know what the deal is, there's still so many things that you don't see coming away. And the way they do it is so original. Like, I brought up the Coens because like one of the storytelling devices is like, you follow a character up to a point and then the point of view switches to another character and you go all the way back to the beginning and follow that character up until that point. And you do that three times basically. And well, maybe more than that, but like three full times for sure. And so it's almost like it's three different movies. Like it's his movie, her movie, and their movie. And then once those plots intersect, it becomes a completely different thing, you know, because it starts out as like, oh, he wants to kill his wife because he finds her unbearable. And she wants to kill her husband because she's having an affair and he's unbearable and has wasted all their money. And these three criminals, or two criminals and a guard, staged a prison break and holed up in an attic in a house. And then here comes this couple who are trying to kill each other. And they get wrapped up in it. And then it becomes like a hostage film.
Yeah, but like then... what do they call them? A home invasion film.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that evolves too, and it becomes something different from there.
Yeah, like this us versus them kind of thing. But it, like the whole cast is great, but there's two kind of unsung heroes, I think, of the film. One is, for sure, Keith Jardine, who plays Todd, who's just the oaf of the group, but he's so fucking perfect in every little thing that he does. And every time you think he's out, like, he's just not out, you know?
He's got a, like, to make the Fargo analogy go even further, he's got a very Peter Stormare from Fargo kind of, like, but an amped up version of it. Like, this is, like, very much
Peter,
like,
Stormare were somehow Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes, like, that is exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is. And it's hilarious, like, all of the stuff. But I also think that, like, this is something that I didn't really realize until watching this film, is that Jason Segel makes people funnier.
Yes.
Like, a lot funnier than you ever imagine. Like everything that he does with Jardine is fucking hilarious. Like, they're back and forth. Like, I can't even tell you, like, how much it works. Like, you know, like, it's weird because it's like, It's super inappropriate. It's super fucking dark. But there's this, I would hate to call it pleasantness that is that comes off, but there's this like pleasantness that comes off from everything that occurs that you're not expecting.
It's that, almost like watching sketch comedy that's going way too far.
Yes, that is very,
like still really funny, but it gets really dark and you're just like, wait, are we actually going here? Or is this still part of the joke? What the hell is happening? And like, there's several times where it just, it's yes anding the darkness of like what they're doing. And I mean, I'm sure some of that is because of the director, and that's kind of his background, right? Like that's,
yeah,
Jorma that's Lonely Island. That's, yep. You know, it's always like, how far can we kind of push this? Like how ridiculous, but true can we make this? And the other, I think unsung hero of the film, is Paul Guilfoyle, who I don't know if we've ever seen, like, if the name doesn't ring a bell, Paul Guilfoyle has been in everything, like LA Confidential, Air Force One, like so much, like just TV and film of like the 90s and early 2000s that it's just one of those guys you see and go, oh yeah, it's that guy from that thing, you know? And he is doing like a character actor thing here, but like, I don't know if I've ever seen Paul Guilfoyle play somebody who I just rooted for and also actively hated at the same time.
He was pretty great. Like he plays a very specific type of father. Which I kind of adored.
He's playing
because
my dad. The whole time. Jesus, that's funny. That's my dad.
That's hilarious. That is fucking hilarious. Because like he literally plays like the most crotchety of old men ever, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. But also like adds in like there's a lot. There's a lot to it. But yeah, like, it's the right tonal mix of comedy, violence, and, good storytelling. I would hate to use the word clever because it's beyond clever. It's just,
yeah,
it's well told. Like there's clever, like, I know that, like, I haven't seen it yet, but the thing that I keep on hearing from They Will Kill Me is that it relies too much on, like, leaning on too heavily on the whole trope of, like, Tarantino-style, like, storytelling, which can be, like, clever. But, like, the thing is that Tarantino doesn't do it because it's clever. It's that's how he tells a story. Other people do it because it's clever because they don't know how to do anything. Like they're riffing off of him. This is like a thing that isn't riffing off of him, though. Though somebody could feel like it is, it feels more Coen Brothers. Like you are very right in that. Like it does feel like it feels like early Coen Brothers, not later Coen Brothers, like later Coen Brothers,
Blood Simple, Fargo, like
Raising that. Arizona.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Barton Fink, it's very kind of small scale, but also like the violence is there. Like they love, like that's the thing that like they like. It's like the Sam Raimi influenced like Coen Brothers, like the Coen Brothers that I love. Like it's not to say that I don't like the new era Coen Brothers, but there's something about those first like four films where there's this hyperkinetic like gleeful. It's gleeful. That's what it is. It's like the movie is very gleeful in the way that it tells its story. It's like a kid hopped up on sugar and he can't wait to tell you, but he keeps on going back and you're like, why the fuck are you going? Shut up. Like, what the hell? But it ends up becoming very entertaining because you're like, oh, like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. Like, okay, where the hell are you going with this? That's very much so like how I felt watching the movie.
Yeah, it's one of the best films. I am with you. It's one of my favorite film experiences this year. And it was not even on my radar in January. Like, yeah. So many of the movies, I was like, oh, yeah, this is coming out. This is, and this was not even a thing. And probably the only reason I went to go see it was because of Stephanie. Like, this is definitely, she watches trailers for everything. So, and, you know, I've talked about it before, but I love that almost without, unless it looks like beyond scary, like the new Insidious film coming out, like that trailer, she was like, nah, not doing that. And me either. Like, that's not my, I can do horror. I can't do that. That's like, I'm going to have a headache and throw up horror. No, like, it's way too tense. But yeah, so I brought it up and she was like, oh no, I absolutely want to see that. And like, just everybody involved playing, willing to play like versions of characters we've seen them play, but completely unlikable. Like,
yes,
there is no redeeming quality. Like, I don't know if we've ever seen Jason Segel this despicable. Like, because you could easily play this role and be like, I'm planning on killing my wife, but also play it as like, I'm a lovable goofball kind of thing, like he does, and be charming. And instead, he's not. Like, he is just kind of ridiculous. And like, yeah, no wonder she wants to kill him. Like, and the same with Samara Weaving, who we literally not a month ago saw playing like this kind of character, only with an American accent and charming, and you root for her.
Yeah. She was more Final Girl energy, where this is more serial killer, despicable energy.
Yeah. And my favorite Timothy Oliphant kind of role, even in a specific, like in any series, you know, is like put upon Timothy Oliphant, you know, where he's just like, I hate this situation and everything I have to do to contend with what's going on. Like, exasperated Timothy Oliphant. And he spends like half this movie being exasperated. Like, when they're trapped in the attic and Juliette Lewis and Todd are like arguing about, they're playing charades or something, right?
Yeah.
And like, the Todd can't get what she's trying to say, and he's like, it's a fucking movie. Like, you know, and she's like, it's my favorite movie. Like, it's just so fun and funny and violent and gory, and it's just everything you kind of need a movie like this to be. I wish I got to see it with any kind of crowd at all. Like, it would have, 25 years ago, seeing this movie with even a halfway packed house, like, it would have just slayed.
Yeah, it really would have. It really would have. Like, and it did. Like, the whole thing is like, the one thing that's nice about LA is that you do get to see, like, people will go still see this type of movie and not wait till video, because they know the theatrical experience is well worth it. And it's just, it's unfortunate that people do not go to see this stuff anymore. It really is. Like there really should be, like, at least on, like, it always seems like we're hearing about these movies 10 years later after we've already seen them. I'm like, oh, what? This is like number one on Netflix? I fucking saw that in theaters. What the hell? Like, that's been a good movie for me forever and a day. Why are we just finding out about this one? You know, it's one of those type of movies. And it's kind of sad. Like, it really is sad that these types of movies, the lower budget, like, highly inventive films aren't making the kind of money that like, or aren't making any kind of, like, not even money, just like noise, like noise anywhere, like with like people say that they're cineasts or they're film fans, but what they really mean is that they like Christopher Nolan and Marvel movies. And that's not a dig at Marvel movies, because we both love Marvel movies. Like, we both, like, you know, there's one coming up that, like, you know, like, there's a few that are coming up that are, we're super excited about. Like, you know, we can't wait to see the trailers. We can't wait to see the trailer for Doomsday. But my diet doesn't consist of that, because if it's only sugar or filet mignon, like, there's no variety. Like what are you doing? Like, why are you only liking, like, three things? Like it's the problem I have, like, you know, being somebody who's older, that I'm like, what? Why? What? Why? Like movies are a monoculture, and they used to be a monoculture, but it's weird how that monoculture has changed. Whereas, like there was variety in what we saw released and what was a hit. Nowadays, it's like, it's all event films. Like, do you know what I mean? It's all tens. It's all tens. Like, fucking, like, I'm happy Michael made money. Like, why? Because it's a biopic, and we don't see biopics make those kinds of money, that kind of money. But it's literally a biopic about the people, the guy that we dubbed the king of pop culture, or the king of pop. Literally, it's made, like, of, like, he is one of the biggest artists in the world. Like, he's still, like, you know, he's still
a bigger story is if Michael doesn't make
money. Exactly. Like,
that's,
you know,
it's why, like, something like the Queen biopic, or the Freddie Mercury biopic, like, doing as well as it did, like, that's the surprise.
Yeah.
Because, like, outside of, like, the occasional Ray or Walk the Line, you know, I mean, the Springsteen movie didn't get any love at the Oscars. So,
no, it didn't. But I mean, let's be honest. It shouldn't have. That fucking movie is like we talked about, like the biopics should have been their form, and some of their lines should have been swapped. Michael should have been introspective and like, he's going to change the world. Not fucking Springsteen.
Yeah. Springsteen should have been more like his
Avengers, like literally, it should have been an Avengers movie, forming the E Street Band, like Born to Run, like, you know, like Born in the USA. Like, it should have been like twinged with like, oh, what am I doing? Oh, the workers of the middle America, what's happening? Shut the fuck up. Like, I'm sorry, but you know what? When you charge, like, I'm all for Bruce, right? But when the only people that can fucking afford your concerts are literally our friend Scott Phillips, who's a lawyer, who makes, like, you know, like he makes lawyer money. Like, it's the only dude that we know that can afford to go see The Boss. You're not The Boss. Like, let's be honest, you're out of touch. Like our friend, friend of the show, Spencer. Spencer is a huge Springsteen fan. Has he ever, or will he ever, get to see Springsteen?
I think he has seen him, but probably not ever again.
Yeah, like maybe, I mean, 15 years ago for his wedding present he got.
Yeah.
Like, or like him and Katie saved up for a year, because that's how much those goddamn tickets cost, man.
Yeah, it's concerts have gotten, everything's gotten out of hand, but
that's why I don't do anything.
It's especially rough for, I mean, it's, yeah, I want to get into some of this when we get into Devil Wears Prada 2.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to go on a tirade.
No.
All right. So,
but it was good. It was really good. Yeah. Like, when it comes out on home video, please do your guys' self a favor and watch this, like, especially if you're into darkly humorous movies. That's the thing. That's the only caveat I will give is that if you're into dark humor and, like, the way that the Coen brothers are dark humor, I think that you're going to dig this. And, like, the final scene is literally one of the funnier things I've seen all year as a fan of a certain kind of movie.
Yeah. I agree. In a similar note, I want, we We just watched the first two episodes of a new show on Apple TV that I want to bring up.
Please do not spoil it, because I already know where you're going. I'm not going to.
Okay, okay. I will not spoil it, but I do.
I've been looking forward to this one. I think I know which one.
If you like this, Widow's Bay on Apple TV.
Exactly.
Is like all of the things you're reading, like it's Jaws meets It meets The Shining, like all of that's accurate, but it doesn't convey like the funny, tense, like truly terrifying shit that happens. Like it jumps around from like, these people on this island are goofy and stupid and like laughing at the yokels, to like, oh shit, this is horrifying. Like it's a tightrope walk, and it's we're only two episodes in, but it's doing it so well that I like it's pretty mind blowing.
There's a couple of critics that I just trust outright, and they were like, no spoilers, but literally this is probably because they've seen 6 of the 8 episodes, I think, or 6 of the 10, and they're like, no joke, this is probably some of the best TV that you're gonna see this year. And I'm like, okay, I'm fucking sold. I need some time. I hadn't been able to go see it, so I'm really looking forward to this. And then I saw the preview, and I saw Matthew Reese is in it. I saw the tone, and I'm like, oh man, this is like, I mean, it's basically like not Stephen King, Stephen King. Like that's literally what it looks like. I mean, they could have called it Castle Rock, the town Castle Rock, and it looks like, oh shit, that's Castle Rock. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm glad to hear that you are very like high on this, because that'll be the thing I think maybe that we talk about next week ish.
Yeah.
Like we'll add this into the mix, because I should be able to get to it this week. So
yeah, it's pretty great. Katie DePold was the creator of the show, and she was on Parks and Rec for like a long time.
Yeah.
And like really, really solid there. And I don't hate the Ghostbusters remake or whatever they call it with the ladies.
The ladies.
But Lady Ghostbusters. She was the 2016 Ghostbusters. She was the writer on that. And like, I don't know that was the problem with that movie. Her track record post Parks and Rec was not that appealing to me. Like, she also wrote The Heat, which I saw, didn't love. But this is, and Haunted Mansion, which I didn't see, but like after one Haunted Mansion, I was like, nah, you're not getting me for another one.
It's like, you know what? It's okay. It's okay. It's not bad. It's not bad, but it's not great either. It's very like she's the kind of writer I feel like probably did a great pre-production draft that everybody is high on, but then you get to production and then you get a production rewrite and then it fucks it all up.
Yeah.
Because I've heard I've heard that the Lady Ghostbusters script before they got on set and everybody started to fuck with it was actually really great. Structurally, it changed, and then just the way that things changed up. There was a reason why Bill Murray was in that movie. Like, that's what everybody kept on. Everybody that read the script told me, it was like, there's a reason why Bill Murray was in that movie. And it wasn't because, like, It wasn't because like he felt like he owed Ghostbusters anything, you know, and like he did them a favor with a 3-scene cameo, but it just changed. And so like to hear that she's gotten a little bit of control and she's produced something that has turned out to be like worthwhile and actually like, you know, proves that, like, I like when that happens for writers, like when they've had like movies produced of their scripts that are like super shitty, even though the script is like great. And then they get a little bit of control. And the first thing they do is produce something truly great and magnificent. Like, that's awesome. Like that yeah. just like in taking the power back, like, you know, like that's like, not everybody can be Vince Gillian who has power, like who's had power all of his career. Because Chris Carter was like, you know, an amazing like exec producer and just kind of gave all of these people that like on the X-Files, like, you know, I'm still waiting for that doc, right? Like the doc about like the X-Files writers in the writer room, because it, all you guys have to do is just look at the X-Files writers and you will see that they are a who's who of genre filming. It's like the comparison would be the Twilight Zone. And what happened over the last 30, like over the 30 years of like all of the writers on the Twilight Zone and all of them and how they became like just masterful storytellers. But I am super excited for this one. We just didn't get to it last night because my wife wanted to go see Devil Wears Prada and I'd seen it at a screening. So we went to go see that and it was just a little bit later of a show. So I will definitely get on that, and so that we can have a full on conversation.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty phenomenal show. I was confused about the Jaws comparison because I didn't really know like what the plot is, but like him being he's the mayor of the town. And that's where the, it's like if Jaws were about the mayor and he were dealing with like a haunting instead of a shark, you know. And like it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I really, it's funny. Like two of my favorite shows this year, assuming this stays good, will be about very small towns on islands in New England. they even mention Bar Harbor in the show.
Oh, really?
Which is where the Doc, well, it's not called Doc Martin, but the Doc Martin U.S.
Doc Martin, yeah.
Yeah, it's where that set is, Bar Harbor. And they mentioned Martha. I don't know how many times they mentioned fucking Martha's Vineyard. It's like so many times. But yeah, it's a pretty fun time. It is legitimately, especially the second episode, legitimately spooky. Like, just like very Shining vibes.
Okay.
Where it's like you're just on edge the whole fucking time. And like sometimes it's funny and then sometimes it's like, oh shit, that's terrifying. I think you're gonna dig it. So I want to bring up, I did get a chance to go to theater to see another film. Mm-hmm. And it's called Deep Water. And
yes, speaking of sharks,
which is the exact reason we went to go see it. Stephanie loves shark films. Jaws is her favorite film of all time. I really like this movie. I don't think it's, you know, excellent, but it is. It's that kind of movie, and we talk about it a lot. It's the kind of movie we used to always go see in the 90s that now is just relegated to, like, we're going to throw it on Netflix. And, I mean, I'm kind of glad that that's not where it wound up. Like, I do think it's a fun theater experience. Rennie Harlan. So, you'll know. So, it's directed by Rennie Harlan, who, in the last 5 or 6 years, has seemingly made a movie like every 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
And so what happened? Was he in like director jail for some reason for a while? Or is he like owes a lot of taxes or something? Not knocking it. I hadn't watched the Strangers films, but I mean, the dude directed 3 Strangers movies
in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a year. So what ended up happening was that his career was declining in the US, and China, at the height of China's like at the rise of when China started to make like big budget movies, they were looking for people to make movies in China, like US filmmakers or like Hollywood filmmakers. I should not say US because he's Finnish, or he's Finnish. Hollywood style directors, and they were offering a lot of money. And so what happened was he was like, fuck it. Like, my career is basically over. He had made a couple of not so well regarded films. He worked with the Weinsteins. They fucked him over on a couple of things.
12 rounds, not well received, early John Cena stuff, yep. Right? Exorcist, the beginning.
That's what did him in, was the Driven. Exorcist. Yep.
Yeah, that was another, like, I seem to remember Driven was like, had a lot of expectation behind it for some stupid reason.
Yeah. And it's the reason why everybody doubted F1 was because everybody was high on, because it cost a lot of money, and Stallone's in it. Like, Burt Reynolds is in it. Like the movie that was released was not Rennie Harlan's movie. It was Stallone's movie. Like, Rennie's Harlan movie is like supposedly very different. I talk about a script changes, but basically his career was over, and China called and he answered. He was like, yeah, I'll come over there for a year. What ended up being like 5 years of like, basically he made movies, but he also was like mentoring like them in like the ways of like Hollywood storytelling and how to make like big budget blockbusters. And if you'll notice, around 2012 to 2013, 14 is when China starts making these huge action movies, like these big budget, like I'm talking like $150 million movies, and they're making massive amounts of money there. A lot of it had to do with Rennie Harlan's like mentorship of multiple filmmakers in that studio, in that Chinese studio process, and he was well paid for it. All of the movies that he's done, like any of the Chinese, like, you'll notice there's a movie that he did, which you're like, why haven't I ever heard? Like, there's two movies he's done, I think, recently that you probably haven't heard of. I think there's actually a John Cena, Jackie Chan movie. And I think that's him. It might not be him, but I think he produced it maybe. But then there's also a Johnny Knoxville, Jackie Chan movie. Like, that's like a Rush Hour type movie that's on Netflix. And it's a big budget movie. And it just, nobody saw it because it wasn't released in the US because, you know, China. But anywho, he made a lot of money over there. He's he's literally like the equivalent of like, he like, in a lot of ways in China, he's kind of like the equivalent of Kevin Feige there. Like, he did a lot of like architectural things as a producer and made a lot of money behind the scenes, a lot of money. Yeah. And so,
I mean, good for him. Like,
yeah,
I've always appreciated Rennie Harlan as a director. Like, even the things that don't, like, I know one of the big things that almost kind of landed him in complete director jail was Cutthroat Island, right?
Yeah,
because it was so expensive. But you know, he's certainly a competent director. So Deepwater, it's a pretty simple premise. Like, it's an international flight to Thailand. Something happens, plane goes down, crashes in shark infested waters, and splits in half. So you have like some people in the tail end of the plane, some people in the front end of the plane, and there's a shark infested ocean in between them, and they have to wait to be rescued. And so, like, it's a couple of different movies in one. Like, there's the first half of the movie, which is the build up to the crash. And then there's the back half of the movie, which is like the shark attack movie. Mm-hmm. And he does an excellent job of like bridging those two types of films. The only really bad part of the movie is the effects work. And it's not horrible. It's just, there's a lot of like, oh, this looks like the volume stuff.
Like, yeah.
There's also a lot of like the plane stuff looks pretty practical for the most part. Like the once they're in the water, like the big giant sections of the plane, you're not ever like really moving around much. So it is a small on the water set, and the sharks look good.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not any moment where the sharks probably look better than the one really good shot of the shark you get in Jaws. Like there's not any moment where you're like, oh yeah, you kind of lost me with the sharks, but it's mostly because they make the sharks move so fast. It's kind of a little unbelievably fast, but they're never still. So you don't get a chance to like really, really look at them. The acting is great. We're talking about Rennie Harlan kind of falling off the map and then surging back. Actor-wise, I mean, Aaron Eckhart, such a good actor, and I don't understand what happened. Like, does he have a bad agent?
No, he has a very bad attitude on set, from what I understand. Ah. Yeah. There's a couple of stories from the core that Stanley Tucci like let out and he doesn't talk about anymore, but you can find them online. And when you hear them, you're kind of like, oh, okay, that's why. Like, he's a great, like you said, like it's on screen, he's a great actor. And obviously he works with Rennie because like he did The Bricklayer, which is like I'm a dude that watches Rennie Harlan movies. Like, you know, I mean, of course, like I've seen a lot of his stuff, maybe all of his stuff. I'm not 100% sure, but he works and he works well with him, and he gives an intensity, like he brings an intensity that you kind of want in Rennie Harlan films. I don't know what it is, but there's this thing where it's like, I always feel like the standard is Die Hard 2 and the sweatiness of John McClane and Bruce Willis. And if you don't bring that kind of energy, something about I think of Driven and the way that Stallone is just not the way that he, like, he needed to be the Stallone of Cliffhanger, as the woman dies, like, you know, he needs to be that Stallone, but he's not in Driven, so it's not as good. Like, John Cena isn't like, you have my wife, god damn you. Like, he doesn't have an intensity in 12 Rounds. It just, like, it's his first movie, right? Like, so you kind of like, Aaron Eckhart, I can only imagine, has like an intensity in Deep Water that matches the kind of like overwrought Rennie Harlan-ness of the movie.
It's like trying to be an everyman while also being an action star.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous, but like, it's the kind of performance you need for something like that. And it works. Like, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that it's dumb, and but it's a disaster film. It's like I said, two or three disaster films rolled up into one, which, like, that it works at all is kind of a miracle. The plane crash itself does the Michael Bay like quick cut, so we don't have to actually like stage an elaborate thing to make it look like a crash. It's just a lot of quick jarring cuts, but it still looks pretty good. Not that Rennie Harlan's in charge of the effects work. He's not.
No, so, of course not.
but it's got some kid performances in it that are pretty good. Like I said, Aaron Eckhart's pretty great. There's certainly one asshole character who may probably have caused the actual crash. Who, like, you can't wait to just get got, like, you know. It's pretty standard in every way, but that doesn't mean it's not just a good time, you know. Maybe not a rush out to the theater and see it good time, but certainly, like, worth watching, you know.
Okay.
I definitely had a really good time watching it, and it did kind of remind me of, like, yeah, I do like Rennie Harlan as a director. Like, there's nothing flashy or truly special about what he does, but just the fact that, like, it's a competent film. It's not stupidly made. There aren't really dumb choices in what he's doing. So, like, he didn't write the script. Yeah. He doesn't do the special effects. So it's kind of hard to, like, hold his feet to the fire of, like, hey man, like, the reasoning behind this plane crash is really fucking dumb and would require a massive amount of people to just not do their job. And, like, okay, but that's part of the fun of this kind of movie. That's, like, what you want in a disaster movie, right?
Yeah.
That's how it becomes a disaster. But yeah, when you get a chance to watch it, like, I'd be interested to hear what you think. Ben Kingsley does Ben Kingsley things, you know?
Of course, like, you know, we expect nothing less from him. I mean,
he's just, even when he's in bad shit, he's just so much fun to watch. And it's kind of like Michael Caine, right? Where
yeah.
It's just like, even when you're in dumb shit, it's just like, yeah, but he's Michael Caine.
Exactly.
Sir Ben Kingsley, you know?
Well, and plus, like I expect this. For every, like, for every single Wonder Man we get from Sir Ben, we get, like, seven Deep Waters. Like, literally, yeah. The dude is, like, he's a, like, so, like, him and Michael Caine and a lot of these other guys, they're, like, I like to, like, you know, I respect them because they're workers. They work. They want the work. Like, you know, Ben Kingsley is in, like, five things a year because he wants to work all year. And
yeah.
He wants to make that money. And so, like, I have to respect that. Like, you have to respect the game of, like, I heard somewhere that Samuel L. Jackson thinks it's going to be funny. Like, he thinks it's, there's an amusement from him that he wants to hit 1,000 movies. He wants to be in 1,000 movies. So he can be, instead of Lon Chaney being the man of 1,000 faces, he can be Samuel Jackson, the man of 1,000 movies. Yeah. And I find that, like, that tickles me somewhat because it's like, yeah, but also, like, he comes from a background where he grew up poor. Same with Sir Ben. Same with Michael Caine. Same with Eddie. Like, they may not be in good shit, but they're going to work. Why? Because they're afraid of losing that house. And their parents were all the same thing. If you do something, you better fucking do it. And why not? I mean, it's like, okay, I get you. I respect that. Get your bag. You're not going to be in everything. Like, not every, like, I find it interesting that, like there's this whole thing of, like, oh, well, like, you know, legacy, la, 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 la. But it's like, everybody's in shit. Like, not everybody's legacy can be perfect, right? Like, eventually, Timothy Chalamet will be in a terrible fucking movie. He will be in a Simple Jack movie, right? Like, yeah. He will. He just will. Like, the odds are that, right? And at a certain point, you will not be able to work. And some of these guys are lucky enough to work. And like Ben Kingsley, it's like, you know, he probably saw, wait. So what you're saying is you want me to be in a shark movie. And
you're going to pay me X amount of money.
Yeah.
And here's what I have to do. Like, it's pretty standard stuff. I mean, literally his whole role is sitting in the pilot's chair, like, chit-chatting with Aaron Eckhart and, like, occasionally saying something that, like, kind of sounds like something out of a book of, like, wisdom.
Yeah. You know?
It's it's kind of goofy, but it's also just kind of sweet. To your point about like Ben Kingsley is just in stuff, like this isn't the only movie of his in theaters right now.
No.
Unfortunately, like the other movie I kind of would want to see, only maybe you know why. Why is Desert Warrior not playing anywhere?
Okay. It was made like, and this will explain everything. It was made with Saudi money.
Okay.
It is a $180 million movie directed by the guy who directed the first
Richard Wyatt.
Yeah. directed the first, whatchamacallit movie.
The Apes reboot, right?
Yeah. The first Apes reboot, before Matt Reeves took over.
Rupert Wyatt directed, Anthony Mackie starred, Charlton yep. Copley's in it, Ben Kingsley's in it. And yeah, like you said, it cost $180 million and it is not playing. I mean, the reviews I've read are not very good.
No.
But it's also not playing anywhere for anybody to go see.
Because it was made with, it was made with Saudi money and nobody bought it other than a small, it's going to be secretly the most, like the money losing movie of the year. Like it is like the biggest bomb of the year because of how much money it cost. They were trying to make it into, like they were trying, the Saudis were trying to make their own movie studio. And they made this movie.
I'm reading some stuff on it. The North American rights were sold for $10 million.
Yep.
The box office is going to be less than $500,000. It will make less than $1 million in the box office.
Yep.
And it cost at least $150 million to make. But even with like limited marketing, when a studio says a movie costs $150 million, usually that means it costs like $220 million.
Yeah, add $100 million to whatever it says. It really is. It's really sad because it looks kind of interesting. But
at the same time, I like Anthony Mack. I like all three of them. I like Charlton Copley, who much like Aaron Eckhart. Like, you got to wonder, is he difficult? Does he have a bad agent? Like, he's just not had the best luck in things. Like,
no,
you know, he's so fucking good in the A-Team.
Yes, he is.
That's like, how is he not in more stuff? And he's just not.
He really isn't. He really isn't. Like, he's just in nothing. I mean, you watch District 9, and District 9 is like, you're like, Jesus Christ, that guy is great in that movie. Like, that, like, that's like a dude who's like, who knows the assignment and knows the tone of the movie that he's supposed to be in. And like, is instantly like a dude that you're like, okay, so why isn't he like a like superstar? But then you ask, like, it's like you definitely sit there and go, ah, well, maybe he's difficult. Maybe he's just that one performance, and we say more than, like, you know, it's more than enough, right? Yeah. But
and I get like Neil Blomkamp's your buddy, and you're just like gonna be in whatever your buddy's doing, but I don't know, man. Maybe you should have said no to Chappie.
Like, man, Chappie was rough.
I mean, Elysium's not great either, but at least if it's like, well, Matt Damon's in it. Well, I guess Chappie has a pretty good cast too, but you know, some of those people can bounce back. You're not Hugh Jackman.
So. No, you are not. You are definitely, no one is Hugh Jackman. Like for a time, Hugh Jackman wasn't even Hugh Jackman until he started doing fucking Wolverine movies again. It's like Jesus Christ. Like, come on. I kind of want to see Deepwater, and then like he's going back to the well, but instead of sharks in the next movie, he's doing like his next movie that's supposedly out like at the end of the year is called Black Tides, and it's instead of sharks, he's taking on orcas with John Travolta. Like, so, you know, I'm there. Like John Travolta in a John Travolta in a Rennie Harlan film. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm all for it. Like John Travolta, like you still got to see that John Travolta movie that Fred Durst directed.
I do want to see that. Am I wrong? Is Rennie Harlan not? I guess he's just. I just looked it up. Why is he listed as a co-director for Cliffhanger, remake?
I don't know. That is a wild ass thing. He's not associated with it in any way, shape, or form. It's the guy. It's Jean. Was it? That Colmet. The French dude that did the Pirates of the Caribbean remake that Disney did with The Rock. Jungle Cruise. Have you seen that? Right? Yeah. Huh?
Orphan. That's yeah. Him too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Orphan, and then all the crazier. The crazier Liam Neeson flicks, like he had a trilogy of Liam Neeson flicks that are just wild, like wildly inappropriate, wildly stupid, and just wildly entertaining. But he's not associated.
I really like The Shallows. Like that was him too. Yes. I thought The Shallows was pretty good.
I mean, you can't go wrong. Another shark movie. I mean, you know, Blake Lively when she was making films and not getting sued. In a that movie
he directed Carry On. We loved Carry On.
Did. Like he's a good director. Like the French guy Colm Kiet Sierra. I can't remember his full name, but yeah, like him a lot.
On IMDb, Rennie Harlan is listed as a co-director for his Cliffhanger remake, which I knew was coming out this year. That's why I'm like, Rennie Harlan directed the original Cliffhanger, so
I think that's a bunch of bullshit. I'm calling bullshit on Indaba. Maybe Rennie Harlan went in there and decided to fuck with everybody and went like, he went into IMDb Pro and he's like, I am the co-director. Here we go. Just decided to fuck with him.
He also has a movie with Sam Jackson that's in
post.
I guess I was gonna say it's already finished. May or may not come out this year. So,
yep.
We like Rennie Harlan, and you know, hopefully. I don't know if you're doing like this much. I know Hollywood is the kind of place where like, if you're doing too much, a lot of people are like, we can't really like have you on our, like our stuff because you do too much. So you know, you're not really that cool because you do so much, but it would be nice to see him like land an actual hit. You know, like his good old days, you know, the Die Hard 2 days. So,
I mean, all it takes is just a smart, like, B movie, like a smart sub $50 million B movie that actually becomes a hit. Like, that's all it takes. I mean, really.
Deep Blue Sea is still maybe his masterpiece.
Like, I think it's, well, actually, there's a disaster piece trilogy that he has, I feel, that are like, depending on the day, could be the best thing that he ever done. Like
Long Kiss Goodnight's pretty great.
Yeah. Well, it's Cliffhanger, Long Kiss Goodnight, and Deep Blue Sea. So like, depending on the day, like it could be any one of those, because it's like, people forget how good Cliffhanger is. Like, just how, like, you watch that movie. Like, I got to see it, I think it was like right when we got out of pandemic. One of the revival theaters out here showed it on 70mm, and it's a big theater. And I got to see it, and I was like fifth or sixth row, so it was like enveloping. And people forget Rennie Harlan made movies for the big screen, and it was a physical production. Like, there's a scene where they I think that people forget, like, there's a scene where there's a robbery in the middle of the sky, and much of that is shot physically, like literally the same thing. It's like,
it's so cool, man.
Exactly. Like Christopher Nolan stole basically the opening of Dark Knight Rises from Rennie Harlan's like air heist in fucking Cliffhanger. Like how the fuck, what the fuck, dude? It's like, or like, you know, it's just, there's so much to his career that I feel like we you know, people lost the fucking narrative on fucking on Rennie Harlan. Like he does so much good shit, and we just like I understand, like, directors pass and there's a different era and it's now, you know, a CGI like infested, like, you know, love fest, and if it's not a superhero movie, nobody wants to go see it. But I don't know, like I feel like recently there's been a shift, right? Like there's been this like quantifiable shift where we're seeing movies be not just more physically mounted, but the style of movie that we're getting is like, of course there's always going to be superhero movies, but also like what we're getting in big budget movies has a tendency to shift to more street level. I don't even know what to call it, because it's not really street level, but there's like this physical production to where it's like maybe somebody like Harlan will get his chance. It's like, it's also like guys like, I mean, I know he went to prison because he was a fucking terrible fucking dude, but John McTiernan, I mean, like that dude made, like, he made three masterpieces in a row. Fucking Predator, Hunt for Red October, and Die Hard. Like, all three of those in less than 5 years. Fucking, like, those were fucking classics. And there's not an ounce of effects work in that. That's all real shit, right? Well,
Last Action Hero deserves to be a better remembered film.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Like,
and it I is, mean, Hunt for Red October, like, is, like, people don't talk about that movie enough, I don't think. I know it's, you know, not as, like, shit upon as Last Action Hero was, but he deserves, well, I'm with you, deserved to go to prison, but, like, he was a hell of a director. You know, he fell off with probably 13th Warrior was the end of his, like, making good movies.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, no, actually, Thomas Crown. I think Thomas Crown was after that. Thomas Crown is, like, great. Like, his remake of Thomas Crown with Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo. Talk about a sexy-ass movie. But other than that, yeah, like, he went off the deep end.
Same year. Like, I'm in the same year.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Though also
And then Rollerball was after that. Rollerball that's was definitely what did him in. The like,
yeah,
like, nope.
That's no what did more. Him in. Well, although
I think we both have a fondness for Basic.
Yes, we do.
People do not appreciate that movie.
That movie's it wild. Is
batshit insane. But yes, it is so fun, and like the reveal is just so. It's so dumb, but it's so like, what?
You're like, it's literally like it's the Hold My Beer movie of all time. Yeah. Like, you know that something's going to be like, I remember sitting in the theater just going, what? Like, my brain hurt because it didn't make sense. Like, I was like, what are you doing with this fucking movie? And the funniest part is that movie nowadays would be 2.5 hours. That movie is 90 minutes long.
Yeah, it just goes.
Yeah.
It's got such a good cast, too. Like, beyond Jackson and Travolta, like, Connie Nielsen and Tim Daly, Brian Van Holt. Like, not that anybody even knows who Brian
Van Holt is. But I mean, come on, Rabisi, dude.
Rabisi and Taye Diggs and, like, Harry Connick Jr. back when he was really trying to be an actor, you know? Like, it's so... I want to rewatch that. I know it's not a good movie, but it is, like The General's Daughter, I felt the same way, where it's like, this is not a good movie, but like, I'm having a lot of fun watching this.
Well, like a lot of those movies, like they like the general's daughter. The reason why nobody watches it anymore is because Jimmy Woods, persona non grata, with every reason, because every time you open your fucking mouth, Jimmy Woods, you say some fucking crazy shit about 16-year-olds. Shut the fuck up. Just shut up and go away. But I actually own Basic. It was like on a triple feature disc. Like, it's wild. Like, it, like, I don't even know what else the other two movies that it's on it, but I own it because Basic is on it. Because it was like $4.99. It was on Blu-ray, and I'm like, wait, you're telling me that, like, I get these two other craptacular movies, but I get Basic. Okay, I'm buying this for $4.99. You know, movie that is not on streaming, right? Like always, like, you know, but yeah, insane. Completely insane fucking John McTiernan military thriller. Like, almost funny that Travolta was doing military thrillers like this. Like, did two of them in a row. Was like, oh, The General's Daughter? That made a little bit of money. Okay. But, you know, Basic, hold my beer, because that's even crazier. Like, because both of them have, like, insane, like, twists at the end of them. But one is, like, you know, The General's Daughter is, like, it's kind of a twist, but it's not really. You kind of see it coming. But the Basic is like, what? What are you talking? This doesn't even make sense. What are you doing? But anywho, yeah. I'm glad that, like, you know what? I'm always like, these are always my favorite conversations that we have. Like when we watch a rando movie by somebody like Rennie Harlan, and they just take us down the pipeline of, like, just not bad movies, but just forgotten, like, programmers.
Yeah. I want to dig up some more. I may or may not watch the Strangers trilogy, but there's definitely some more. Like, he had a recent movie from 2020, 2021 called The Misfits, which was written by Kurt Wimmer, who is someone I kind of sort of appreciate in a way, but with Pierce Brosnan and, like, a pretty good, like, surrounded by a pretty good cast. Like, never heard of it, but I'm like, I want to track that down. And I, you know, I think you're right. Like, back to your point, like, if we do go back to a more, like, physical form of filmmaking where we're not relying on so much, like, tech, we're actually, like, out in the world filming shit. Like, it's people like this that will survive, because he knows how to direct shit like that. And, like, it's honestly when Deepwater is a good example. When it's just this, like, CGI kind of nonsense stuff, the movie's not that good. But when it's, like, these set pieces on, like, the parts of the plane are, like, supposedly they're like underwater, like in a capsized portion of the plane, it's shit like that that really, really works in the movie. It's the kind of, like, gobbledygook of, like, CGI nonsense that's like, it doesn't really work, because he doesn't direct that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah,
he directs actual, like, physical things, and the movie's really good in those portions of it. So it's probably, like, a good you know, if Devil Wears Prada is not your thing, I think Deepwater is a good, like, alternative programming, kind of like, I want to go to the movies, but I don't give a shit about Michael, and I don't care about Miranda Priestley. So let's go see this shark/airplane crash movie.
No, absolutely. The whole thing was that we talked about it, like, full disclosure, like, we talked about this movie well before, like, we talked about it last week and wanted to go see it. And then, like, come Thursday, like, I talked to you, I was like, literally the closest theater, like, and this is the wild thing about LA, like, I should be able to go see this at my local theater, but literally the closest like place that actually had it playing was literally 35 miles away. And I mean, you know me, that's, I'm a Rennie fan. Man. Yeah, I'm a Rennie fan, but I ain't gonna go that far to go see a Rennie movie. Like, I'm just not. Like, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm just not going to.
Not when it's going to be on Prime or whatever in 2 weeks. You know?
Exactly.
Like, gas is fucking $5 a gallon. Or where you are, it's probably a lot more than that.
It's almost six, so yeah, let's not talk about that.
It's a little over four here, so, or right at four here, so yeah, it's like I can't sit in traffic and go 35 miles away to see a movie that I can see on my couch in 3 weeks. Like, I completely get that, so
yeah.
But so, yeah, I'm excited to hear what you think when you do finally catch up to it. And yeah, I may have me a little Rennie Harlan film fest, like, because I have occasionally get a chance to watch movies during slow periods at work where I'm just sitting there waiting on the phone to ring. So like this last week, I watched, I decided to have a throwback to my childhood, and I watched the G.I. Joe, the movie, and the original Masters of the Universe movies.
So good.
And, like, those movies are batshit insane.
Yeah, like, they are.
Cobra Law is a fucking insane concept for a movie. And also, like, I'm just, like, why do you have a cartoon aimed at, like, 8 or 9 year olds? And you have a character named Snowjob. Why is his name Snowjob?
You know, you know.
How did that pass? Like, censorship in the, like, 80s? I know it was lax in some ways. But, like, in an era where it's, like, you can't just have, like, these commercials. Like, you have to. Like, the reason in He-Man and G.I. Joe, there's things at the end, like the more you know kind of things, is because the censorship bodies were like, these are just commercials to sell toys. You have to have some kind of like positive message in there.
Yep.
But you somehow let through, like, oh, they named this character Snowjob. It's fine. There's no fucking way that would get by anybody today. Like, it is insane. Like, and I know he's just a minor character in G.I. Joe, but it just took me hearing them call him Snowjob, and I was like, wait, that was his name? How did that not register in my brain until I was in my 40s?
But because, I mean, well, like, it's just one of those things. It's like, I was thinking about this and just like all the insanity that's like, that's there within our, like within our childhood. Right. And it's just like, it's nuts. Like, it really is nuts. Like, how much, like, just stupid shit like that got through.
I mean, He-Man was just as bad with the character names. Like, yeah. Fisto is pretty rough.
But then like
Ram Man is like, beyond just being a stupid name, it's like, okay, that's a little like innuendo-y.
But also like think about this, like circa 1999, George gets away with Kit Fisto.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's be honest here, like, that's some stupid shit. Like, how did you get away with that? How? Like, just answer me. How? How did you get away with it?
How is nobody being like, that's a stupid name, you got to call it something else?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, we can't, George, we can't call him Kit Fisto. That's just, people are going to have a field day with that name. Like, Snowjob. Like, guys, we cannot call this character Snowjob. People are going to lose their minds. And, like, yeah, I don't remember, the internet didn't exist at that time. So, but I imagine if it had, it would have been a much bigger deal of like, wait, there's a character named Snowjob. But that movie is pretty damn good. And like, I haven't seen it in a long, long time. Don Johnson is awesome. Like, it's so perfect watching him just be this like punk ass kid, essentially. It's a lot of fun. It's on, it's either on Prime or Tubi, I can't remember where I watched it.
Tubi. It's on Tubi. Like, like, you know, the internet's, or the like, what I feel is like the most like underappreciated.
I'm agreeing with you more and more every day. I watch more stuff on Tubi. Like, there's so there's a cartoon that probably nobody watched. I think it only had a couple of seasons on Cartoon Network, called Evil Con Carne, that just dropped on Tubi that I fucking loved. Back, it's not that old. It's like a early 2000s cartoon, so it's not like the 80s stuff. But it is, it's insane. Like, this kind of mad scientist puts his brain into a like circus bear, and it's just so dumb. But it's on. They dropped all those on Tubi, and I'm pretty sure that's why I watched Masters of the Universe, which. I'm getting a little excited for this He-Man movie. I've heard a couple of things that people saying, like, this is better than it has any right to be. I'm like, well, the old one was better than it had any right to be. Like, it was stupid, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I've been hearing the same thing, but I mean, you know, the people behind the movie are very much so like the kind of people that you expect to elevate the material. And like, I'll be honest with you. I own He-Man Masters of the Universe, the original Filmation. And I started, like, you know, like, anytime I watch it, I forget how really bad it is. Like, I think that people often forget like just how bad it is and how it's actually probably more of the, early to mid 2000s version of Masters of the Universe that people are really thinking of that's actually good. And also, like, your love of the comics that were included on the
with the action figures.
Which I totally want to get. I would totally love to have like a collected edition of all of those action figures, comic books. Like, oh man.
Yeah. It's funny, like, rewatching, cause, all of the old He-Man cartoons are also on Tubi.
Yeah.
They're not good, but like G.I. Joe is pretty good. Transformers original stuff, pretty damn good.
Yep.
But like the opposite end of that, those movies got good animated films, and He-Man got a live action film that's better than the fucking show. Like, it doesn't have the like level of craziness that the show has, like the truly wild characters, because, you know, they're on a budget. But you know, the acting in that movie, like, is pretty fucking top notch. Like, everybody's really, really, Billy Barty is really good as Gwildor. Like, you can't have an Orko because we don't have the budget for that. But we're going to give you this character, and we're going to call him Gwildor. And it's like, I don't know, he's pretty fun, man.
No, he is. He but Billy Barty in this era was like in his prime, right? Between this and the wizard in Willow that he just shows up as a cameo, like the three scenes that he's in. It's just like, he sells. Like, I love Billy Barty, man. I loved Billy Barty. So good. I mean, I watch that movie all the time. I love that movie. I own it. I just, like, when you have enough distance away from it, because, like, if you watch the movie, like, when we initially saw it in theaters as a kid, I think that my expectation was that, like, you know, they give me all the roll call thing that like Empire kind of does, right?
Yeah.
Where you see all the bounty hunters, but Empire they move away, and I was okay with it. I was not okay when Masters of the Universe had a whole action scene and like it just killed them all off in one action scene, right?
Yeah. It's pretty crazy to like introduce them in that way, and then you think it's gonna, but they invade Earth, and then almost all of them die immediately.
Yeah. all of them die immediately. Like, it's like, huh? What's going on here? It is wild. But also, like, you know, I mean, it's fitting because it was like budget, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, we didn't really, like, you know, we didn't have any concept of like what they were doing and the fact that it was produced by Canon. And, like, you know, I mean, that Canon do as Canon does, right?
Yeah. We've got $50 to make this movie go. Like, that was like the way it was. But yeah, it got me a little pumped for this new movie. Yeah, that's pretty much that was my week. And, well, no, I did watch one other thing, but it's not really worth mentioning. But I'll say, Stranger Things has an animated series out.
Okay. Yep.
It's not bad, but it's also not. It's probably as fun and interesting as the final season, but like the voice cast is not great, and the animation is a little lacking on. Like, it's weird. The animation for like the characters is fine. The creature animation is not very good.
Oh,
like, and so it just doesn't really work that well. But yeah, I watched those. Like I said, not really anything to discuss there. Unfortunately, they need to let this go. Like, just let it go. Yeah. Maybe revisit Stranger Things in like 5 or 6 years when we've kind of forgotten how bitter the taste of the end was.
Maybe do bitter Stranger Things 90, 95?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So, all right, so do you want to talk about some Devil Wears Prada?
Yeah, let's absolutely do it. So had you seen the first movie before, or was it just this week that you
no, had no, seen? No. I watched the first film when it came out. Like, I saw it in theaters, I think, and I've probably seen it once or twice since then. And then, like you said, very recently, I went back and rewatched it just to kind of like familiarize myself with kind of everything. I really liked the first movie. I also really like this movie. I don't think it doesn't have the bite the first movie has, but it kind of isn't supposed to, because like very early on, that's kind of the like joke, right? Is that Miranda can't be who Miranda used to be.
Yes.
Because the world has, you know, moved on from the like, you don't get to always be a bully to everybody thing. Like,
exactly.
She's getting called on her shit. And rightfully so, but it's still there a little bit.
Yeah, it is. It's there in a very like 2026 version of it, right? This is both movies are like, so like Devil Wears Prada and Devil Wears Prada 2 are separated by 2 decades, literally exactly 20 years. I feel like both of them are very much so products of their time. And watching the first one again after a little bit of a break of not having seen it, like, very much made me realize, man, this is like 2006, the movie. And this one is very 2026, the movie, because it deals with very much 2026 themes, right? But it does it in the way that, like, a bubbly, poppy movie does. Like, I don't hold anything against it for it taking on, like, I know the big criticism for some of the critics were like, well, it does this journalistic thing where it takes on journalism and billionaires, but it doesn't give any answers. What the fuck? Why would you ever think that this was going to take on and answer it? It was just navigating with it. It was giving you a fantasy within the confines of that of the era that we're in, just like the first one.
I would, this is not a film I would ever look to, like, I'm honestly shocked that it raises the dilemma of like the death of
journalism,
not just print.
Yeah.
Journalism in general, like the death of it and like the negative influence tech and specifically tech billionaires have had on everything, but definitely journalism. And, you know, I don't think the first film tries to tackle any like truly heavy themes like that.
No.
It's more just the like day in the, not day in the life, but like that kind of like moment in this person's life and like how going through Miranda kind of like changes her perspective to some degree and makes her like a stronger person. And like, it's not a heady movie, and this kind of tries to be, but not in a real way.
It's no, just like, it like
we're not gonna present these themes, and then, like you said, we're gonna give you a story in there that makes you, gives you a little feel good to it.
Exactly. Like, okay, so like, it is not a film that like, and this is where I'm like you, like for some critics, it's like, obviously you did not see the first one, because you are putting so much on the first. It's not even funny. Like, you're projecting, because this is a movie that actually like body shames. Like there's so like, okay, so like I have a reasonably hot take about The Devil Wears Prada, which is that it's a good, almost great movie that is completely ruined by its ending. And my take on The Devil Wears Prada 2 is that it's a reasonably okay good to good movie that is made so much better because it has the right ending. Yeah. Because spoilers for a 20-year-old movie, this is a fucking movie that she takes the advice of her fucking piece of shit boyfriend, who's played by Vinny Chase, who fucking sits there and has the audacity, who would have fucking given his left testicle to be in The Bear. Like, he's a wannabe bear. Like, Bearzano is actually Bearzano, right? This dude is like a third or fourth grade level Bearzano. Like, he's a wannabe. Like, fucking, they made me make, like, you know, like his stupid fucking potato story. Fuck you. You got gaslit. Like, this is a movie that at the end she gets gaslit by her fucking piece of shit Vinny Chase boyfriend, who's not in this one, thank God, and is told that she's not a real writer because she's working for one of the most prestigious like fashion magazines. She gets handed the fucking world. Like, she literally is basically given everything. And she walks away from it.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. Like, people have told me, oh, well, you know, she wanted to be a real journalist. And I'm like, you know what? Then you obviously are the part of the problem if you don't think that somebody working for that kind of magazine is a real journalist.
Yeah. And this movie kind of corrects that.
Exactly. Right? It course corrects it at the end, right? Because she still has that, like, it's almost like this movie went, you know what? We know the ending was shitty. Let's go ahead and make a whole entire movie that navigates us back to where she should have been 20 fucking years ago. She should have basically given the El Duce, the two middle fingers to her boyfriend and her fucking friend, who was like, yeah, man, 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 you don't know anything. It's his birthday. Are you fucking kidding me? It's his birthday? Oh, I'm sorry. Like, if it was a dude, if it was reversed and it was a dude, they'd be like, well, you know, he has this important thing. Like, you know, he could become a dirt farmer with Noma, you know, and go off to Iceland and make fucking like beetroot reductions because with a guy who's going to yell at him and tell him he's a piece of shit for fucking 3 years, but he'll be a master chef. fucking same thing, but oh, she's a fucking piece of shit. Why? Well, we all know why. It's really weird how that movie, like as much as people, I mean, and people love that fucking movie.
I wouldn't say I love it. I do like it a lot.
I like it a lot. Like, no, I do too.
And so it was interesting that they were doing a sequel, especially considering it's been fucking 20 years. But like, since we've been on like a little director talk, I want to ask you, like, am I wrong? Has David Frankel only made two? I haven't seen everything he's done, but has he really only made two good movies? And both of them are Devil Wears Prada?
I think so, dude. I think so, because I was looking at his filmography and I was like, I could not see any,
I want to see Jerry and Marge Go Large. I didn't see
it. It was not a good movie. It was very much, okay, so like it was very much a Netflix movie. Okay, so let's go ahead and just like recap his stuff, right? Collateral Beauty, terrible not fucking good. Movie. Marley and Me, terrible movie. Hope Springs, terrible movie.
Not good.
The Big Year, terrible movie. Miami Rhapsody, not good. And then like Marge and Jerry Go Large, terrible, terrible movie. Like, he literally
did that James Corden movie too that I didn't see, but the trailer is awful. So,
oh yeah, I mean he's done, but I mean he's
it's
done
not
some
once. It's yeah, one chance.
That's yeah,
it.
One chance.
But it's not once. Once was the like the
yeah movie the,
that everybody
the,
loved
yeah the musical the semi musical yeah. Yeah.
So David Frankel has made two good movies.
20 years apart.
Both of them are just Devil Wears Prada. So David Frankel can only direct Devil Wears Prada movies. That's it.
That is it. Like, this is from a dude that, like, I mean, like his biggest hit, what, like, and none of them were good, like big hits. Like Marley and Me was kind of a movie that did some money, but also like, here's the thing is that Marley and Me was based off of a super blockbuster book. Like it was like a Tuesdays with Morrie's type of book. And I hate that fucking book too. Both of those books. Fucking stupid fucking. Yeah. Like drag my emotions. Like I didn't go see Marley and Me because I read the book. And I literally threw that book across the room.
It's the thing. Like once you know, you don't need to go.
Yeah.
Like I know what this is. I don't need to go see it. So, anyway, back to the actual Devil Wears Prada. I don't know. It like much like the first movie. I think the linchpin of this film is, of course, Stanley Tucci.
Oh yeah,
who is just magnificent. He plays off everyone so well, and I'm gonna spoil the one like legitimate spoiler that this movie has, because despite the Gaga stuff, I don't like it wasn't that big of a shock to me. Gaga's in this movie. Of course she's in this fucking movie.
Yeah, of course.
The one actual plot spoiler in this movie is the whole movie, it's the one thing I had a problem with. It was how Anne Hathaway winds up back at this magazine. I was like, it's so half-ass concocted.
Yes.
That like it almost just ruins the movie. And then you find out at the end, he's like, dear, how did you think that you wound up back here? It was me. Of course it was me. I sent them like, hey, look what she just said. The minute we were in trouble, I knew you had to come back.
Yeah.
Like, and it self-corrects the one thing in the movie that I was like, that's so half-assed. I can't believe that fucking BJ Novak just happened to be scrolling on his phone when they were in crisis and been like, hey dad, look at what this journalist just said. Like that's so just beyond ridiculous for a movie that tries to be, you know, maybe not grounded, but at least exist in the real world. Like, it's just so half-assed. And to find out that it was Stanley Tucci that kind of, like, put everything in motion, I was like, it made me, it really did make me smile. I was like, oh, that's a sweet little touch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's very much so a, it's a movie that, like, understand, like, it, like, it's a movie that understands its fandom, or at least understands enough about the fandom to know what it wants. Like, and knows, like, well enough to know to give the things that it wants, but also not to give it what it wants sometimes. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, nobody was asking for, like, a tech billionaire, like, storyline between, like, you know, rival tech, like, you know, like, people using, like, you know, it's very much coded to be about, like, BJ Novak is David Ellison and like, you know, what's his name, Justin Theroux is basically both Elon Musk and what's his name, Jeff Bezos, right?
Yeah,
like, more Bezos than anything else. And like, I find it funny that Emily Blunt is basically playing a version of Lauren Sanchez. And yeah. Lucy Liu plays the Mackenzie Bezos.
Since you're bringing up Justin Theroux, who
yeah.
is the, like, unwitting bad guy of this film. Well, I guess him and BJ Novak. So have you gotten to Running Point yet or not?
Oh yeah, no, I totally have gotten to Running Point.
Like, so between Fallout this year.
Yes.
Running Point and Devil Wears Prada, like, all he's done in 2026, which I guess was in 2025 because it's when most of this stuff was filmed, is play, like, super rich douchebag fuckheads.
Yes. Like, he's in his villain era, isn't he? Like, I mean, those are, like, basically what he's played. Like, and each one basically the same, but a little different, right? Yeah. Like a little different.
He's more, like, nerdy in this, whereas, like, Running Point, it's the, like, spoiled brat billionaire.
Yes.
And in Fallout, it's the, like, Elon Musk kind of, like, well, he's a spoiled brat too, but, like, it's the I think I know everything, like, Machiavellian billionaire kind of thing. And, but yeah, I was just, like, when he showed up here, I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, it's May. It's the 1st of May.
And yeah.
4 months, I have seen Justin Theroux play three different billionaire characters who are problematic as fuck.
My favorite part, though, is that he's just enough unrecognizable to be completely unrecognizable in this one. If you did not know it was Justin Theroux, like, if you weren't looking for him, you wouldn't know, because it's just weird enough, like, with his hairline and, like, the weird yeah. makeup they gave him, that it doesn't look like Justin Theroux from Running Point, or, like, what we know is Justin Theroux.
Yeah, he's in a very intentional, this is what we're going for way, he is unbearable in this movie.
Oh my, like, god, yes.
The minute you find out that he and Emily Blunt's character, Emily, is there together, it's like, oh, she is with him because he has money and will buy her things.
Yep.
Like, and Stanley Tucci calls it out. He's like, that is every girl that never paid attention to him.
Every girl.
This is why, you know, he's there.
Yep.
And, like, I hate that for Emily Blunt's character. She does get to be a little bit more than that, especially at the end. Like, that she gets the final little, like, scene at the restaurant with Anne Hathaway.
Yeah,
like,
and they course correct. They even course correct yeah. their relationship.
Yeah, I really, really liked that moment.
Yeah,
I think it. It gives some weight to her character, like, that if you go back and rewatch it, kind of helps, you know? I like that Emily Blunt gets to confront Miranda, and do the whole, like, we were going to pull, like, I was going to pull the wool over your eyes. Like, I was going to oust you because of, you know, like, all of the toxic shit I had to put up with and the fact that you wouldn't get out of the way. And I mean, and even as mean as she is, I like that Miranda, like, does stand her ground and is like, you don't have it. You never did.
Yep.
You know, like, and I know you don't want to hear it and you're not going to believe me, but you don't. I do wonder why, not that he's not great. I love Kenneth Branagh. Don't know what he's doing in this movie.
So my theory is because, like, Christina was, like, my wife was saying the same thing. She's like, well, but she doesn't call him Kenneth Branagh. She calls him Perot because he's Perot to her. She goes, why is Perot in this movie? And I was like, I think it's because he wants to make another Perot movie. And the only way he was going to be able to do it, because the last one wasn't made a lot of money, but is to be in The Devil Wears Prada. And then we got to thinking, and go with me on this, how amazing would it be? It's almost like a chemistry test between him. And what if it's a Perot, Miss Marple? Yeah. Miss Marple, like, fucking the goat playing Miss Marple. Oh man, like, I was like, oh, maybe that's what they're doing. And then that's the next Perot movie is Perot and Miss Marple, and Meryl Streep is Miss Marple. Like,
yeah,
then you bring back you bring it back to, like, you know, full status of, like, event. Because I mean, the third one was great. I love Death in Venice. It's actually my favorite of the Perot movies, but it made the least amount of money.
Still haven't watched any of them.
Oh,
Stephanie,
man,
likes them, and I just haven't. I love Kenneth Branagh. Like, even with the, like, you know, he wasn't always, like, not that he's, like, a, you know, he's not a child molester, but he just always wasn't, like, the best dude, you know, to the people he was with. It's pretty well out there. But so I've just always really liked Kenneth Branagh. I like him as a writer, director, love him as an actor. Like, he was given an interview for this movie, and he actually, I don't know if the interviewer brought it up. All I saw was him talking about ideas he had for ways to wrap up the Thor franchise. And I was like, please let this man come back. Like, give him the budget that you gave. What's his name? Let him do that kind of Thor movie. Like, I know he's got another, like, thriller that's not Poirot, like, in post-production, like Madeline, Last Disturbance of Madeline Hind, with Jodie Comer and Michael Sheen. And, like, that sounds fun. Like, I really like him. He doesn't have to do a lot in this movie, but he is this nice little, like, atmosphere, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like,
and it's really nice to see Lucy Liu do stuff, because she's another actress that just, you know, she stopped doing stuff, you know?
She definitely did. Like I think that a lot of it, like, it's like with that casting, I think it was very intentional because of the person that she is. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, like, it was like, oh, okay, well, you forgot about this person. Let's go ahead and bring them back.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very nice to see, like, it's very nice to see that they are, like, that it, the cast is very purposeful, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how it, like, we definitely have to see how it goes, but I'm like, it'd be interesting to see if, like, because this is going to be a monster hit. Like, they already,
I think they were saying easily what, like, 60 million for the weekend.
Yeah. Like,
and they're saying it could go as high as 80.
Yep. And judging, like, they haven't brought out the figures yet. Cause, like, you know, they're, like, it's not until later on today, but like, Friday was already at 35 million. So, Like, you know, like it, like the last couple of weekends, it's been like projections have been way off just because more people have gone and seen, like they've over, like Michael went over and it looks like this is going to be over. I mean, it was sold out in our crowd on, like on a seven o'clock showing on a Saturday. But I mean, that's not uncommon for a big movie in, you know, like in my area to like sell out. But I mean, this had like a, this had a different audience, an audience that you don't typically go see movies on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit more an older, like it's more 20, like 30s and 40s, which that's usually an indication to me that this is going to be big. Like the same thing with Michael. Like when we went to go see Michael, people in their 30s and 40s. And it made, like, that's when you know that something is like, oh, they're getting up out of their seats to go see something out of the Netflix. Like, they don't want us to watch, you know, so,
Project Hail Mary is very similar, where it's just like, oh, I'm seeing a, like, a diverse group of people, but a lot of people my age or just a little bit older are there. And that's like a, that's a key sign of like, oh, this is going to have legs.
Yep.
So
I always love hearing people like when they're not on the app and like they're at the ticket booth. Cause it's like now it like at ours, I don't know about yours. It's like there's one booth that, that does the ticket sales now because everything's done online. Yeah. And like, you know, that like people don't go to the theater when they're getting upset at the line and you can hear them like, and people are saying, you know, please use the app to go ahead and purchase your tickets. It will be much faster and you will be able to get in on time. And like people, old people going or people going, well, why do I need to use an app? Like, don't your tickets are terrible. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you, when's the last time you went to go see a movie? Are you the kind of person now that goes up to the thing and say, let me see the Ryan Gosling movie, the space movie. I hated people like when I was working at the theater, I hated people like that. Like I was the dick that went, what movie are you talking about? You know, the Clint Eastwood movie, the new Eastwood. I'm like, I don't know what movie you're talking about. I don't know who that is. What do you mean? And I'd get in arguments with people, old people, because I was a fucking 20-year-old ass punk. And I'd make them literally look up the, I got in trouble for this. I would not sell them tickets unless you
tell me the movie.
Name. Yeah, tell me the name of the movie. I don't know what the new Eastwood is. I'm like, look at our listings. Well, it's not here. The new Eastwood. This one. What is this one? Blood work. Oh, okay. You want to see blood work? Okay, let's get you blood work. Fucking. Oh, it, 77 million.
77.
Yep. That is. So,
that's from Thursday through Sunday.
Yep.
And $77 million.
That is with Michael making another $55 million.
Yeah. I think Super Mario probably made another, what, 6 or 7?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, like, so Devil Wears Prada 3 is probably in the pipeline because, you know, Meryl gotta eat, like, you know, Emily
Blunt. She didn't like to do sequels. The reason it took 20 years is because Meryl Streep would not agree. The only reason she agreed to do the sequel to Mamma Mia was that she wanted a reduced role. She didn't want to be so they wrote the script with her in a smaller part. And that's the only reason she's in it. So, but you know, this kind of money, like, not that she needs money, but it might be like a Hugh Jackman kind of like, or Chris Evans or whoever, like, how many dump trucks do we have to back up to be like, let's do this again? So I'm with you. I don't think it'll be 20 years before we see Devil Wears Prada 3, maybe 10 years, but I do think it's definitely going to happen. So one thing I wanted to get into about the actual plot of the movie is, like we talked, it's the whole tech billionaire, like, buying up everything. You know, it's what we're currently seeing. You know, it doesn't get into AI, thankfully, mm-hmm. But it does get into the like the shrinking of just everything. Everything's a conglomerate now. You know, it's everything's just being bought and sold all the time, and shrunken down. And it's again, I like this movie. I was telling Stephanie this. I was like, I understand what they're saying, and I do agree to a point. But listening to a movie about, like, from the point of view of the fashion industry, talk about what's kind of immoral and wrong about a situation is so frustrating. And I like the actual, like, current real world comparison is I told her, I was like, honestly, it's a lot like listening to the Pope talk about everything that's wrong. And I'm just like, yeah, man, I agree. Except, do you know who you work for?
Exactly.
Like, exactly. This movie opens with like things coming undone because of their alliance or promotion of a company with terrible labor practices. And, you know, that's sugarcoating, like, hey, we employ like children to put this shit together and pay them nothing. And that is still going on. It hasn't changed. Like, you go buy fucking Nikes. Like, who do you think's assembling those Nikes overseas? Yep. Like, it's not ethical work practices. Yep. So if I don't want to say disingenuous, because that feels like a strong word, but it is a little like the message is right, but it makes it hard to swallow when it's coming from people that work in, you know, which I guess it's getting harder and harder to be somebody who works for anybody who isn't like so ethically compromised. And yeah, it's kind of maddening, man.
It really is. It really is. It's pot kettle black. Very much so. Very much like, it's like when I was watching, I was like, oh, like this is what we're doing. Okay. Yeah. That like you said, it's like the Pope criticizing people, and it's like, wait.
You do understand the Catholic Church. Yeah, but like, this is the Catholic Church we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Y'all are the Catholic Church here. You do realize what you're saying, though, right? Like, come on, motherfuckers.
Could you start by apologizing for the, you know, decades upon centuries of like abuse you've caused to other people? Like, yeah, it gets a little frustrating when you agree with the message, but like don't necessarily agree with the organization it's coming from.
Yeah.
But that said, like I did really enjoy the movie. I do love the, in my mind, it is like the movie I always go to in my mind for the situations like this is Secret of My Success.
Yes.
Which is a movie that nobody's ever seen except me and you. But it was Michael J. Fox, like towards the kind of end of his, like being in every other movie, before he got Spin City. But he's in a movie called Secret of My Success where like they kind of like stage this weird takeover of this company. And like Devil Wears Prada does that at the end, and it's fun and clever. And even though like you see it coming, it's like, it's always fun to have like those gotcha moments for characters that you're like, yeah, fuck these people.
you're right. Like I didn't realize that that's what it does. Like that's literally what it does. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, and you're right. Like, it's completely fine. It's not a bad movie. It's like, what I'm always, what I'm more shocked by is the fact that they made a movie that's an actual movie, and like, they were able to connect the dots and basically like land the ending. Like, more than anything, I'm very shocked by that. I mean, anybody who like derides this movie, I'm like, it was the Devil Wears Prada. It was a fizzy movie that like fat shamed somebody who never should have been fat shamed.
Yeah.
That like it was a shitty ass, it was a shitty ass movie. And it has a movie that gaslights a woman into thinking that the best part, the best way for her to live on her life is to let her boy, her boyfriend who treated her like shit, like a grumpy little fucking child, and maybe possibly follow him to his career and not take on the good paying job. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. I'm totally cool with that. No, you're wrong. Y'all are wrong. It was a good movie that was ruined by a terrible ending and its weird politics. And they, of course, corrected. They've made a movie now that, yeah, maybe not be the greatest movie, but man, it, like that ending.
The fact that it works, like, I'm with you. The fact that it works, that it's competent as a movie, that like you can get wrapped up in like the emotion of it and the characters, and like speaks more to like it being enjoyable as like beyond any kind of like message it kind of half-heartedly tries to bring, like just the fact that it's a good movie. Like, I mean, that really the takeaway from this episode of the podcast should be that like David Frankel should only make Devil Wears Prada movies.
Yep.
And Rennie Harlan should only make shark movies
or like, fish aquatic thrillers where giant fish or giant apex predator fish or like sea animals are killing things.
Yeah.
So like him
those
doing,
two directors stay in those specific lanes.
Exactly.
We'll be happy. All right. So next week, we're definitely going to be talking about Mortal Kombat. I know our schedules are a little wonky, so I don't know when the episode's coming. But I did get a chance to catch up with the first Mortal Kombat. Finally, movie is better than it has any right to be. I am now super excited to see this new one. It's weird to me that the trailers are just now like really hitting hard.
Yes.
Like the movie comes out next week and now the trailers are everywhere, but you could barely see a trailer up until about a week ago. Like they felt like they just were not promoting it, which was weird.
It really was weird, but I'm happy that they're doing it now. You know, and maybe it was just because, like, you know, a lot of these, like, a lot of the space was taken up by Michael and Devil Wears Prada, right? Like, it just, like, the air was taken out by those two movies. Like, I couldn't
even watch a... Yeah, you're fighting a losing battle. I'm with you.
Yeah. You couldn't even watch a basketball game without seeing four Devil Wears Prada's, like, advertisements. Yeah. Or Michael advertisements. Like, even now, it's still, like, super going on.
Yeah, they those two films, very specifically, I'm with you. Like, those companies were definitely going to spend the money to promote those films. So you're fighting for ad space with those two behemoths. So, like, once they're kind of have run their course, then you get a chance to, like, jump in and be like, guess what's this week? The new Mortal Kombat. Come see it. Johnny Cage. It's going to be awesome. So it does look fun though. Like I read like one like early review of it that was very dismissive of it. Like saying, oh, it's kind of like reading the dismissive reviews of Deadpool Wolverine. Like this is just like bullshit cameos and action scenes. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want. So, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're like, oh, what is the problem with this? It's a Deadpool movie. What did you expect? Like, yeah. That's sometimes where I'm like with The Devil Wears Prada 2, I was like seeing some of the reviews, I'm like, what did you exactly expect from the movie?
I would have thought this movie was almost, I mean, it is review proof. It's just made almost $80 million. But like, really, it's like not, maybe not review proof, but like, why bother to review it? Like,
yeah.
Well, especially if you're going to say anything like really bad about it, because like, well, people are going to go see it because they fucking love the first movie. Like, it's probably going to wind up being like the surprise kind of like hit of the summer, because is there anything else coming out this summer that has like that? I don't want to say like specifically the female like appeal to it, but that isn't like this mass marketed like action kind of thing. Like,
other than Moana, which is more of a kids movie.
I finally saw the trailer for that. Holy shit.
That's rough, isn't it?
A bad trailer, man. Like, it's bad.
I just like everything about that movie, there's something wrong with it. I'm like, oh God. Oh God. The Rock almost looks like AI version of like what you think The Rock should look like. And like it's like you tell Claude, hey Claude, show me what The Rock would look like in a live action version of Moana. And it's like, hold my beer. It does not look good. Like, but you know, people love it. People love the, like, you know, I'm just like, okay, fine, whatever. I'm not going to worry about this, but it does. Like, it's going to make $1 billion because that's just what these Disney movies do, is they make $1 billion.
Snow White didn't.
No. But Lilo
probably
and
has
Stitch.
A little bit more current appeal than Snow White's such an old story that, like, I can't imagine you getting kids now excited about Snow White. I think you could get them excited about Moana. So, yeah.
I mean,
much like Lilo and Stitch. So
exactly. And also like the other thing is, it's like, it, like you said, it's Lilo and Stitch. Like, Lilo and Stitch to me is an abjectly horrible film. Like, it is a horrible film to me.
I liked it.
I did not. Like, it just, everything that's wrong. Like, it just, it has no heart. It's empty. Like, to me, it was just like,
I'm with you there. I don't think it has the heart that the original animated film has. But like, in a world where they were going to make a lot, I guess I'm more, much like the How to Train Your Dragon, I'm like, well, in a world where you're going to do this, the fact that you didn't make it something that I absolutely hate and retroactively puts distaste in my mouth for the character and the franchise as a whole makes me happy. So I'm just like, yeah, I liked it. Because it didn't make me hate the franchise. So yeah, I like it.
Like, How to Train Your Dragon was very different to me. Like that was actually, like, they actually did what they were supposed to do. Like, they understood the assignment and then some, right? But then again, it's also, you get the same filmmaker that made the original.
Yeah, it is a little different.
So. Yeah, and, like, you know, it's, like, I feel like DreamWorks has a little bit more, like, DreamWorks Universal cares a little bit more about their product. Like, that's honest. Like I don't feel like Disney really cares about their product.
Oh, they care about live action stuff for sure. Yeah, they just care about keeping that IP alive and
making money and selling $1,000 tickets to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Which I'm a big Disney head and I love Disney, but like, literally, like, that's all it feels like that's going on right now with them. They're just creatively bankrupt. Like, you know, I mean, so much so is like, so you didn't have IMAX screens. Rather than moving your movie, you created some fucking bullshit like thing that you're gonna proprietize and charge. Like, that was the whole plan regardless. Like, oh fuck you IMAX, we're gonna just make our own thing and we're gonna charge theaters more money because we want to do this, and then theaters are gonna be more bankrupt. Why? Yeah. Because they fucking, like, rather than selling cheaper tickets, they're selling more expensive tickets. Like, they're like, I mean, of course we're all going to go see fucking Avengers, but I don't know if I'm going to go see it in this stupid new, what is it called? XL screen or whatever it's called. I'm like, okay, Jesus Christ.
So here's a, like, I was ending the podcast, but like, we got some news this week about a movie we've kind of talked about a little bit. It's the new Narnia movie coming out.
Oh yeah,
it's supposed to be out in November of this year,
but
Netflix has decided to push it to February, where they can release it on IMAX screens because the runway is clear and it will get, I think a much bigger window than they initially had even said. I think it's getting like
45 days.
Yeah. I was going to say 2 months, but yeah, 45 days.
For a minimum. It says a minimum of 45 days. And it's not just like, and then I was reading further into it. It's not just IMAX screens. It's not going to be just IMAX exclusive. It's actually going to be the other theaters. They're actually finalizing deals with AMC to make, like, to bring their movie this, like, and you know why? Because they want to, because they understand they're leaving money on the table. They're leaving money on the table.
And it's like reading this that makes the, like, fucking Warner Brothers, like, the fact that Warner Brothers isn't going to exist as its own entity anymore at all is upsetting. But it hasn't been its own in a while. The fact that it's going to be part of the fucking, like, right wing nut job shitty empire that it will be is frustrating. And now we have, like, we're seeing Netflix kind of like start to back up the things that they've been saying that, that people have been like, yeah, but we can't really trust you. But I mean, here they are moving a movie that they spent a lot of money on. And like doing right by the creators, making deals with theaters, which is something they've been really hesitant about, and kind of like, you know, maybe not giving it the 3 month window we all would kind of maybe hope that it would get, but 45 days, you know, that's something. It's a start. So, like, those Warner Brothers movies probably would have gotten the theatrical window that they should get, like, through the Netflix deal that is not going to fucking happen now. So, that was just, but the point being, like, but we still have Disney playing like chicken shit and trumping up like bullshit screenings because they don't have the IMAX screens because they won't move their movie. Like, you have Netflix doing right by its creators and Disney, like, trying to just lie to people, I guess. It's fucking weird. Like, if you're not going to move the movie, fine, but don't try to, like, shit in IMAX's cereal. Because at some point, you are going to need those screens.
Yep.
You might not get them for this movie, but you're going to need them for something. And so you do this to kind of spit in their face. And then the, what's his face? The guy at IMAX is just like, comes out and is just like, oh yeah, all of that is bullshit. Like, you know, that's them hyping up something that is A, already exists, that isn't new, that isn't special. And B, trying to, you know, sell you just shit.
Yeah.
And like, you don't have the IMAX screens. Just like, well, we don't have them and leave it at that. So, that whole thing is just fucking weird, man.
Well, and it's like, and the other thing is at the end of the day, you know who loses? We do. We as the consumer lose, you know, and it's like,
I think you said it last week or the week before, like when you could literally just move one of the movies that you have, move it forward or move it back, and then move Avengers to like November.
Yeah. And you could own it.
Yeah. You'd have at least a month.
Yeah. A month. And giving people a movie early Are you kidding me? Like, unless you know, like, here's the thing. Unless you know that you need to have the competition so that it plays off of your shit, because your shit isn't very good.
I mean, what? You lost the summer because they got Christopher Nolan. Now you've lost the fall because they have Dune, or the winter because they have Dune. Like, all you had to do was, like, find a window and do it that way. I mean, I know you want it to open this year because of, like, whatever. I'm sure it's an investor thing. Like, that way, that all that money counts for this fiscal year and not next year. So I get it, but you also could have easily pushed it into January or February and been like, oh, we own the next 2 months of the IMAX screen.
Yeah.
So, it's just so stupid, man.
It is.
And you're right. We lose. But, like, ultimately, I do think, like, Disney, it's going to cost them a lot of money not having that extra, like, little tacked on fees for the ticket sales. And the backlash of, like, people laughing at them for this Infinity Vision shit. Like, some people maybe, like, buy into it because they're not really in on, like, the ins and outs of everything. But, mm-hmm. like, by and large, people like us, like, the minute it's announced or even talked about, we're just like, oh, yeah, you're, like, shitting in a bag and telling me it's lunch. Like, no. Like, no. It's dumb. We're not buying it. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I still think there's a small chance that they move that movie.
I would not be surprised. Like, it's very, it is very much so, like, one of those things where I'm like, I don't, like, it, like, it, it's very telling to me that they're, like, after not having a presence for the last 2 years at Comic-Con, that they're actually going to be going to Comic-Con. That's not a good thing to me. That means that
they have washed their hands of it. Like, you're so behind the eight ball now that, like, we have to do something. We have to keep drumming up this momentum and keep it going, because if we lose any steam here, we're fucked.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's, we'll see what happens at Comic-Con.
It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting.
So, until next week, when we talk about some Mortal Kombat, you can go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yeah, themovieisle.com, where we've got a bunch of, like, really great 4K releases that we're talking about right now. Specifically, I just posted some stuff that's already there, and like Blue Thunder. I did a 4K review of Blue Thunder, which is a great, great 80s movie. A lot better than I remembered. And if the transfer is great, love it. Speaking of dark comedies, I just reviewed Throw Mama from the Train, which is a great Danny DeVito, Billy Crystal 80s joint with the Ann Ramsey. And then next week I'll have a review of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which I'm really looking forward to diving into, which has a 4K release. And I will say that 4K release is very impressive. Almost as impressive, but not quite as impressive as the Excalibur release. But the Excalibur release is like 3 discs. It's got like massive amounts of shit in it. The Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves definitely has it's definitely a great, great disc, and I'll get more into that one when you see my review. But yeah, we'll be back next week with some Mortal Kombat, which I'm very much so looking forward to talking about.
Me too. We'll see you guys then.
Number 1 Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now.